So welcome, everyone, to Spring Awakening, Shed Your Winter Weight. It's so great to have so many of you tonight from across the country. I'm very excited, and I'm also very happy to have with me tonight Melanie Rogers of Melanie Rogers Nutrition.
Hey, Rochelle.
Thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Great. Melanie is the founder of Melanie Rogers Nutrition here in New York City. She's a registered dietitian and we're partnering together. She's working on a new center for eating disorders that'll be opening in June called Balance. So we're excited to be doing some more work together.
Very, very much.
So tonight we wanted to speak a bit, it was very exciting with the spring coming on this weekend, how we could help you shed some of the winter weight and what are some of the skills and tools you can use to move forward into this lighter, brighter season. So the first thing we wanted to talk about was spring activities. And as I mentioned earlier, I'd like to do this more as an open forum, which means we'll talk a little bit, but I'd love you to join in or jump in if you've got a question or something to share with the group. That's fine. I am keeping time, so I'll be aware of what's happening, but at the same time, wanted to open it up a little bit more this time. So spring activities. For most of us, except maybe my Floridian and Californian friends, it's been a long, long winter, and it's time to get a bit more outdoors. So one of the things I wanted to bring up was this idea of what type of footwear people are wearing, and have you had your feet measured or remeasured? It's interesting when the body changes shape that the foot shape can change as well. So many women don't stay up to speed with the size and shape of their foot in length and in width, such that they're still wearing the same shoes maybe that they wore either last summer or during the winter time, and might actually need a new pair of shoes in order to be working better and getting activities going. Does anyone have any thoughts or comments on that, on my shoes, sneakers?
Rochelle, just one point. I know that one of our people calling in today is having a rough time with diabetes. I think it was Jennifer.
Mm-hmm.
And the footwear piece is incredibly important there for just, you know, making sure that there's no abrasions and blistering and such like that, because it can cause a real problem with that.
Yeah, that is true about the foot. And I would say that for a lot of women, too, on the line, that you're always having to be very careful about what's happening with your feet, whether they're getting pedicured or not, looking for any cuts or abrasions, especially for the diabetics. But also for if you have a difficulty with range of motion or a loss of sensitivity in the feet for different reasons, neuropathy or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone else thoughts about footwear or size and change of shape of feet? Really? Well, I'll give you another story. One of my clients has changed her body significantly, such that she did have to remeasure because her feet were slip-sliding in her shoes from last season. So she had to actually have a whole change in her footwear, depending on how much her body had changed. The other thing to keep in mind is that with the warmer season, your feet could also swell as you're out there trying to do some of the work. So you need to be very special, pay attention to the type of footwear and socks that you're wearing, that the foot isn't too bunched up in the shoe in order for you to get moving. Some of the other things I think that work very well as we move into the spring season is that you have to look at movement as everything counts. Every time you're moving your body, I would love if you could just say to yourself, I'm moving my body. Because what happens is we're ready to go. The body is naturally ready to move. We may have to take small steps to get going, but you have to tap into the spring, this sort of spring awakening, that things start slowly. And just like the trees and the flowers blooming, it moves slowly but then gains some momentum. I like to think that's just like your movement program. If you've been indoors for most of the winter season, you need to move slowly, but then gain some momentum by adding more activity each day. And it's especially this time of the year that I love to see people getting outdoors more, because we've been in the house so long. And again, I say to my Florida and California friends, perhaps you could shed a different experience to those of us in the dark, cold Northeast. But it's this idea of getting the body slowly moving, even if it's to just be outside in the sunshine a little bit more each day. Florida, could you comment on that, Susan, in Florida?
Well, it's fun to be able to get out now that it's sunnier, and it's sunnier later in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I've been hearing so much about vitamin D and how good it is, you know, for everything in your, you know, everything.
Mm-hmm.
So the more we're out in the sunshine, the more we're getting vitamin D and getting healthier.
Terrific, yeah. And Susan on the West Coast?
Well, you know, it's actually been a pretty cold winter for us. For you, it probably wouldn't seem that much. But, you know, in the evening, it can get down into the 30s at night. So it's been pretty cold. And but, you know, the last week or so, it just really started to feel spring-like. And I actually started feeling more like going outside and walking and taking more time at the doggy park, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Walking around a lot there, and it's just starting to be just beautiful. So I miss the season, so I try to create them for myself.
Okay, great. Colleen, tell us about what's happening out in Idaho.
You know, it's cold out here, but I've been really fortunate to do a lot of snowshoeing and cross-country skiing.
Mm.
So I'm just looking forward to it's interesting because typically I gain weight in the winter and lose weight with the summer. But now that the weather's getting warmer, I've sort of had the opposite experience in the past month, so it's part of what prompted me to call in here.
I see. Well, that is interesting. That's actually a lovely segue into our next section. We're going to work with Melanie on the spring foods and how to shed that winter weight. I don't know, Colleen. We'll see how this works out for you.
Yeah, exactly. That's great, Colleen. It's going in reverse for you. Firstly, may I say it's just a pleasure to be here tonight with everyone and with Rochelle, who I respect immensely. Can you hear me okay,
yes,
Rochelle?
Yes, your volume's
okay?
Great. Mm-hmm.
Terrific, thanks. So Rochelle had asked me to speak about spring food, shedding winter weight, and I just wanted to talk about a couple of things that make the transition into spring not as difficult and as calculated as it needs to be, and hopefully a lot easier. Firstly, we know that fortunately over here on the East Coast we get a little bit more sunlight, which means that you're just naturally out and about a little bit more. So the activity piece that Rochelle just spoke about also is a much more organic process. You're out and about a little bit more. As far as the food piece then, what we also know happens is in the winter we tend to go towards heavier foods, whether that be slightly higher fat foods or more carbohydrate foods, breads, pastas, that sort of thing. And there's a reason for that, because it's kind of like a hibernation effect. You know, we need a little bit of extra insulation on our bodies. It protects our core body temperature and keeps us physiologically safe, if you will, over the winter. And comfort eating also, because you spend a bit more time at the house and the kitchen's there and TV and all those sorts of activities kind of lend themselves to a bit more eating. So if you think about spring and you're out a little bit more, it's getting warmer, your physiology is actually going to push you more towards lighter foods, believe it or not. So this might be a relief for a lot of people actually, because you're thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to, you know, make the transition into, you know, lighter foods? But it's actually a bit more of a natural process, because what happens over the winter is you end up with almost something like, we call it taste fatigue, which means you almost get sick of eating the same kinds of things. And then once all the new fruits and vegetables and produce comes out, you may find yourself going, oh gosh, I haven't had that, you know, for ages, and finally strawberries are not $15 a packet or whatever, you know, and you can actually treat yourself without going bankrupt. So there's a natural desire of the body to seek out a variety of foods, and it does that to ensure that you get a really nice spread of vitamins and minerals throughout your diet without you having to calculate that, because obviously it's the body has its own way of keeping you healthy. So to sum that up, what I really want to say is that you will find yourself naturally drawn towards lighter foods for taste variety, but also because in the spring and into the summer you're going to be desiring foods that have a higher water content, because it's a little warmer out and you're going to be sweating, whether you're moving about too much or not at all. But again, you're going to be looking for lighter foods that have a higher water content. So what I really want to say is that it's a nice organic process if you can listen to your body. Mm. Now, that's the hard part. Mm-hmm. If you can listen to your body and follow, what do I really want to eat right now, you'll find that you'll actually make a very kind of almost unconscious or semi-automatic transition into these lighter foods and, you know, delight in the pleasures of the sweetness of the fruit that's kind of be coming out and that sort of thing. So I don't want to burden you with the idea that, oh my gosh, I've got to, you know, make a plan and cut the calories and all that sort of stuff. I'd like to encourage you more to a gentler process of listening to your body, enjoying the extended daylight hours, and then just going for more variety with your foods as they become more available on the market.
Yes, Melanie, too, you make a very good point about the tune into the natural process and listening
right.
to the body. You know, I'd
right.
say it's the same with the movement, too. We want to move more, and I think that often we're overriding this natural sense of the seasons, and this is a very organic, natural process, so people should be moving more and moving into different food choices without it being such a burden, as you said.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you want me to comment further on that,
sure,
Rochelle?
Sure, that would be great. Go right ahead.
Yep, no, that's okay. So, I mean, basically that they're the main points that I wanted to point out. And also the other really important piece is that for many of the women on this call, with the exception of Colleen perhaps, it is very normal, and I want people to know this, it's very, very normal. Almost everyone gains a few pounds over the winter, and then they're a few pounds less during the summer, predominantly due to some of these points that Rochelle and I have just pointed out. So what I think is very important when you're coming out of the winter season is to not start panicking about, oh gosh, I've got to lose that weight that I gained over the winter. If you tune into your body and follow the foods and have a little bit more activity, you'll find that your body will very naturally drop those couple of pounds that it may have collected over the winter. And again, a part of that is because your body doesn't need to keep itself so warm, especially for us East Coast people, and it's more efficient for the body to reduce a little bit of weight and shed a little bit of that insulation so it doesn't have to work so hard to keep the body cool, which is what it's going to be doing in the summer as opposed to in the winter where the body works so hard to keep the body warm. So I think going into it not feeling down on yourself or guilty or feeling a little bit of despair about, gee, I've gained weight over the winter, oh gosh, here we go again. I think kind of just mentally where you're at is very important as well, to be gentle with yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Colleen, your case is a little different. Do you have any thoughts or comments about that? Or,
you know, I do, and actually I feel bad almost bringing up my example, because typically I do follow what typically happens, but I've been training for a race, and the training has allowed me to lose weight. So it's because I've been training on a specific program. So I think that's why this winter has been atypical for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the problem is the race is actually in 2 weeks, and I think the past few weeks I've been really nervous and emotional about it. So I think my eating is not so much reflective of the season, but just emotionally I've been nervous and I've been turning to some carbohydrates and for some comfort. So sorry, it's not so much seasonal. I think it's emotional.
Maybe that's a great idea though, Colleen, for anyone who feels up to it, that, you know, to plan some goal-oriented activity or something at the end of the season, and then they can gear up towards that. I think that's a great idea that you did that.
Mm. Yeah. Let's see, Jennifer, I know you're up in Connecticut. It's been a long, cold winter for you as well.
Yes.
Are you ready to... Melanie, what was the word you said about the taste of the taste buds there? What? The taste?
Taste fatigue.
Taste fatigue. Colleen, yeah. Does that resonate with you? Not Colleen, I'm sorry. Jennifer, does that resonate with you at all?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I tried to buy some berries occasionally, but you're right, you could really go broke up here trying to buy fruits and vegetables, so I'm really looking forward to them coming down in price so I can incorporate some more into my diet. And then it does satisfy. I have a terrible, terrible, being a diabetic, having a terrible sweet tooth. I mean, I guess it goes, Mitra says that that's
not normal, but it happens a lot with diabetics that they have a terrible sweet tooth, and that's how they evolve into diabetes, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I know diabetics aren't supposed to eat too much fruit, but at least a little bit would help satisfy that horrible sweet craving I have. So I'm really definitely going to start getting more berries and more...
Yeah.
And I love them. That's the thing. I really do.
Mm-hmm. Melanie, which fruits would you recommend as the best ones in terms of instead of taking the sweets, since the fruit might work well instead?
Absolutely. Jennifer, to be honest with you, for anyone who has a problem with their blood sugars or even just sweet cravings, if you eat fruit, actually any fruit, but if you combine it with a little bit of protein, and what I mean by that is if you have a little bit of cottage cheese, for example, with your pineapple, or
mm-hmm.
what fruit do you absolutely crave, Jennifer? You mentioned berries.
I love blueberries and blackberries and those kinds of
great choices, though, great antioxidants, all that good stuff in them. But if you actually have those with some yogurt, which has some protein in it, if you like that, or if you have them, or if you have them with, as I mentioned, cottage cheese, or even some low-fat cheese like Alpine Lace. I don't know how that would go, but you know those Laughing Cows little squares, if you did that with apple or pear, for example, basically what you're doing is by combining the sweetness in the fruit with the protein in those dairy products that I mentioned, it cuts down on the impact of the sugar on the body.
Really?
So we call that food combining for diabetes. So protein plus carb means that you can still have your fruits and it doesn't have a big spike on your blood sugars that it would if you ate it by itself. Yeah, and that's helpful for anyone who might be struggling with either just a sweet tooth or their sugars might be a little bit, you know, either just a little bit over normal or actual diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Penelope, you tend to have an you have quite a variety in your food. Any thoughts, comments about as we go through the spring? Are you coming out of winter? Or?
Well, if I was as thin as the asparagus that I've been consuming in an enormous quantity, I would be a happy camper. When it drops to $1.99 a pound, I go nuts.
Right.
I've probably had asparagus every day for the past week and a half.
It's so healthy for you too.
And I'm fascinated by the apple and cheese, which is my favorite combination and my favorite evening snack.
There you go.
And I'm absolutely astonished that it's a real one.
It's a real one, and it's a good one, too. It's a good one. You just have to obviously keep a little bit of an eye on the cheese because, obviously, that can be quite caloric, but I love it, you know, and just a little bit with pear or apple. Oh, fantastic.
Well, I always do the light cheeses anyway, which helps
perfect.
Some.
Yeah.
You people are very right. You're great.
And Susan Sussman, I want to check in with you because you're in one of the food capitals of the world, I think, in Las Vegas, or buffet capitals, I should say. How are you doing out there?
It's interesting because it's actually the weather out here is really gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been managing to find fresh fruits, and everything else out here is so grotesque, actually, that the food is not appealing at all.
Mm.
Wow.
Those big buffets aren't appealing?
I haven't gone to any big buffets.
Okay.
So I think I do better when I avoid those. And things are very, very expensive, very overpriced.
Mm-hmm.
And when we actually went out to dinner last night and walked out because if we were going to spend, you know, $45 for a piece of steak, we can go to Peter Luger's in New York, and we don't really need to be here to do it.
Yeah.
So we've been doing a lot of salads and just not really going for big meals.
Okay.
Mm.
Terrific. Well, I'd also like to spend a little time, Melanie and I and all of you, talking about some of the spring cleaning ideas for wellness, because we get all this energy, we get this natural thing going on, the light gets long in the day, we move towards lighter foods, but then we have the physical space sometimes that we live in that may seem overwhelming to shift a bit. So one of the things I wanted to mention was I'm always fascinated when women still have all these clothes in the closet from size, the lowest size they've ever been to the highest size they've ever been, and everything in between. And what I'd really like to do is encourage you at the very least, you know, the very minimum, to donate one outfit that does not fit you anymore. We're obviously in a huge crisis in the country about people needing clothing these days. And I just think if it's too much for you to do the whole closet, try one outfit that just doesn't fit anymore. And just notice how that feels in your body, that you're going at it with an intention for not only for yourself, but giving to someone else as well, another woman that may need it. And I find that really lightens the load, literally lightens the load so much when you place an intention behind what you're doing. So don't try to clean the whole closet out, but make it an intention of yours to choose one thing and donate it out. Melanie, you have any thoughts about spring cleaning for wellness with regards to, you know, the physical space, the home, the... Melanie, did I lose you?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep. I think that was a terrific idea regarding, you know, going into the closet. And from the closet to go into the kitchen, I don't know about everyone online here tonight, but I certainly know that there's some products that have been in there for probably more than 6 months. Probably more than 9 months, probably more than 12. and, you know, I pull out these items, I look at the expiry date, and it's like, oh, my gosh, I'm a nutritionist. I shouldn't have this in the house. You know, it's 2 years old or something. So I think taking that spring cleaning idea into... you know, one area of your pantry, don't overwhelm yourself by going into every shelf, but just, you know, maybe just keep an awareness over the next month or so, and every time you pick up, get something out of the pantry or out of the fridge, just have a glance around and pick up something else and check the label on it, and over the next month or so, you might find yourself just spring cleaning out your fridge and pantry.
Yeah, that's so true, and I love how everyone laughed about the expiration dates because it is so true, you know. Very
true. You'll be charged, right?
Yeah. So it's the intentionality we're talking about behind a lot of these things and not getting overwhelmed, and I think that's the key, wouldn't you say, Melanie? Because that to me can then lead into even more overeating or less going out or...
Yes.
Those types of activities.
Absolutely. There's a lot of research that really supports the idea that the more stress you place on yourself, that I should be doing this, I, you know, need to be doing it, and, you know, these sorts of, you know, that internal dialogue, you know, those tapes that play in your head, it actually produces a stress response that Rochelle has probably spoken about before. Mm-hmm. And what that does is we know it actually, for many people, it triggers the eating response as a soothing mechanism, and also because when we eat, when we're stressed, there's actually chemicals that are released in the brain that make us feel calmer. Serotonin is one of them. You may have heard of that particular chemical. So in other words, stress is really not your friend. So don't put the pressure on yourself. Be really gentle with yourself, and Rochelle's been saying, you know, the idea of kind of just a self-care and just gently going about it. And, you know, by the time you get summer, you'll be like, wow, I've got this great footwear and I'm walking a little bit further and hopefully drinking lots of water. And I've cleaned out my fridge and my cupboards and donated an outfit to someone in need. So you'll be feeling pretty good about yourself.
Oh, that was a wonderful summary, Melanie. Thank you. I also want to say, too, that I've been doing some research. I think some of you know I've almost finished with this article for the fitness industry on Pilates and the plus-size body. And one of the very interesting things was activity and mindfulness being present actually lowers salivary cortisol. And the key word to keep in mind here is cortisol levels. So the mindfulness lowers the stress levels in the body, which is lots of research to back that up, which I thought was also really exciting. It's not just us as health professionals saying, you know, don't stress out.
Right.
It's got a lot more behind it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'd like to open it up for questions, and more thoughts and comments, and hear from...
No question.
Go ahead, Elaine.
It has to do with the length of time items are good in terms of food, cans and, you know, meat in the freezer and that kind of thing. Anybody know?
Aside
from
expiry
dates.
Melanie there?
Yeah, sure. I don't know if I understood the beginning of the question or heard it correctly, Rochelle.
How long would the expirations, meaning how long can stuff stay in the freezer, or if I do have a can of something on the shelf and it's expired, does it really mean I have to throw it out? Or?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm a bit cautious with canned goods, but canned goods, quite frankly, I mean, they can survive for years and years and years. You just want to make sure that... you know, I mean, if the expiry date is done, I usually throw them out, but they usually have a fairly long expiration date on them. As far as product in the freezer, I think you can get a good 6 months out of most items. And after that, they lose some of their nutritional value and they have freezer burn. But as far as becoming toxic for you, unless they've been, you know, defrosted and then refrozen again, you should be okay up into the 6 to 9 month mark. I usually write a date on my foods. And if they've been in there any longer than 9 months in the freezer, I tend to throw them out with meat products, you know. Yeah. Anyone else have any experience with that or what their thoughts are on frozen meats?
Well, this is Penelope. On canned goods, there is a booklet you can get that translates the codes.
Oh.
And I forget where it is. I can get back to Rochelle on that information she could.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, that would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them, they don't have a real date, but they have a code, and the codes are findoutable.
Great. Good.
Which is so interesting, isn't it? Because that suggests the mere fact that they don't put an expiration date on the canned goods means that they can actually stay, you know, consumer friendly, let's say, for quite a long time. Otherwise, they'd have to put a due date and a date on them, wouldn't they, for food poisoning reasons?
Mm.
So, but that's great information to know. Yeah.
And I guess I would also say, and this is strictly my opinion, and has nothing to do with anything written. But if something that you've frozen looks at all dry through the wrapping, or discolored, or in any way, just the slightest bit different than when you put it in there, or uneven, terribly uneven in coloration, frankly, I would ditch it.
I totally agree.
You know, I was also thinking, excuse me a second, Willie, you know, when you've got that thing in the back of the freezer, it's like the same thing in the back of the closet. If you haven't looked at it in the last 6 months, get rid of it.
Probably not going to. Remember taste fatigue.
Taste fatigue, yes. Keep the taste fatigue in mind, yeah. Susan in Florida, activity levels, how are you able to get out and about? I know you probably drive more than we do in New York. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah, you have to drive everywhere, really. excuse me. We're having, mold and spore season here. The last time I heard anything about it, the oak and pine pollen was at 10 on a scale of 1 to 10.
Mm.
So it makes it a little bit hard for me to spend a lot of time outdoors right now because it's kind of an allergy-making thing. But I'm looking forward to getting over to the beach, which was it on this call that somebody said that all you have to do is go to the beach if you have any kind of sinus problems? I guess not. But
sounds
is that
cool.
True? That somebody was saying that, and I am going to test it out because I think the fresh salt air probably is going to, you know, like be the best thing I can do for, you know, getting out of this pollen.
Yeah, yeah. Other questions or thoughts, comments?
A question from Eleni.
Yes.
Can you say anything about agave? I hear a lot about it, and I'm just not sure where it fits into the scheme of life.
Sure. Agave, do you mean the natural sweetener?
Yes.
Yes, the natural sweetener. Yeah, it's very, very popular here. I believe it originated from Japan, or they've been using it there for, thousands of years. As far as what I've read on it, it seems to be safe. And I've certainly seen it here in New York City. I've actually seen it out at some of the different coffee and such as an alternative. So I thought that was quite interesting. Yeah, I mean, the feedback on it seems to be okay. Have you used it yourself, and how do you find it?
I mean, it's very tasty. It's less...
Yeah.
I'm not particularly a sweet person.
Right.
And I find it is more than... A tiny bit of it is more than sweet enough. But I had... You know, heard that it was better, or that if I was going to use a sweetener, that it was one to certainly consider and perhaps use in preference to sugar or honey. And I just wondered if you had an opinion.
Sure. I don't actually know. I haven't looked into the nutritional value of it because really when it comes down to it, sugar and honey are very much the same thing, except for that honey has just a few extra little minerals and such in it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's a slightly different taste. But as far as artificial sweeteners, if we were going to compare to that, you know, there's been a lot of research on Sweet and Low and Equal, and now even Splendor and just artificial sweeteners in general, they're suggesting could trigger a greater sweet craving in us, because the body is expecting something sweet to come into the body, which it doesn't get because it's not absorbed, and hence, you know, triggers a whole sweet craving. So this may be an alternative. Again, the research on it is, there's not too much on it just yet, but the safety component of it seems to be quite good from what we understand so far.
Thank you.
What about the cancer risk for, this is Susan, Los Angeles. What about the cancer risk with artificial sweeteners like Splenda?
Yeah, Splenda, the cancer risk on Splenda actually is, if I were to rank them for you, Splenda would be at the top of the list as far as safety, followed by Equal, and Sweet and Low, or, you know, we do know can cause cancer, but again, it would be truckloads of it you would need to consume. So the pink Sweet and Low I would definitely steer away from and go more for Equal. But if you can and you do need artificial sweeteners, which some people do need, Splendor's your best bet if you can.
On the topic of sweeteners, can I ask another question?
Yes, go ahead, Elaine, and then I'm going to do just a final roundup. But
okay,
go ahead.
Just, I always avoid, what is it they put into things, corn sweetener, corn...
The high fructose corn syrup?
Yeah.
What's the bad thing about that by comparison to, say, sugar?
It's actually just the same thing. It's just called something different, so you don't really know that it's sugar, and it's just mass-produced here in the States, and it's very, 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 very cheap. So it's just a form of sugar, really, and it's in most of our foods. You know, there's a lot of politics that go into why that is in a lot of our foods, and part of it is really supply and demand. There's an oversupply of it, and people don't realize that it's sugar, because if they put the word sugar on it, then everyone would be, you know, throwing their arms up in the air and saying, my gosh, I just can't believe this product has sugar in it. But if they give it a different name, a more chemically based name, it kind of camouflages it a bit, and that's a little bit about, you know, the food industry is quite good at that.
Well, that's very good, Malini. Well, what I'd like to do, ladies, is just take a loop around and see how everyone is, you know, just ending up and see how people are doing. Susan, Las Vegas, how are you feeling as we close out our call tonight?
I think I'm okay.
You think?
Yeah, I think.
You miss us?
Yeah, I do miss you.
Yeah.
I hope you'll be back home soon.
Yes.
Okay, terrific. Colleen in Idaho?
Oh, great. Thank you so much for sharing this.
Oh, I'm so glad you could join us.
Absolutely.
Susan in Florida?
Thank you so much, Rochelle. This was so fun, and I really feel like I've joined up with a wonderful group of friends. So thank you all.
You're welcome.
Great.
Penelope?
I feel very refreshed. The phrases like taste fatigue will remain with me.
Right.
That is a good
one. And I desperately needed a focus and something to grab onto because I'm fighting desperately with weight issues. So.
Mm, good, yeah. Taste fatigue. Elaine in Amherst, Massachusetts?
Yes. Thank you for reminding me about protein and fruit. I seem to remember that happened.
Mm.
I really enjoyed this call. It was very useful. I particularly like Melanie's knowledgeableness about food.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Susan Emanuel in L.A.?
Yes, I second that in regards to Melanie, and I feel great. I'm so thrilled that I was able to actually get in on a call for a change. So I'm really happy, and it was very useful, and I miss you, too.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
And great. And Jennifer in Stamford, Connecticut.
I learned a lot, and I thank both you, Rochelle, and Melanie for sharing all of your expertise with us, and I do feel connected to these little spots of light across the country. I'm definitely going to teleconference again.
Yes. It was so great to have you on the call, and I know it was your first night on. I do want to say this was especially wonderful tonight. Melanie, it's always fabulous to have you, but just so great from the whole country that we had all of you calling in, such a small group of women, but from across the country. It was just so beautiful to me that we could speak this dialogue and have an open and very, very knowledgeable and warm conversation. So I thank you all. Melanie, if you want to get a hold of her, the website is mrogersnutrition.com. And her telephone number in New York is 212-645-6903. And as I mentioned earlier, she is opening a center in June, and we'll be doing some work together on compulsive eating and binge eating disorder in her center there. And we're really looking forward to working together.
Absolutely.
Melanie, thank you so much. Ladies, thank you so much. Our next call will be April 20th, and I will send an email out to you about content. And Jennifer from Connecticut, I do hope you'll join us again.
I will.
Okay, terrific.
Thank you so
Melanie,
much.
You're welcome, Jennifer. Melanie, thank you so much again. Ladies, have a wonderful evening, and hopefully we'll hear from you all on the 20th.
Thank you. Bye, Rochelle. Bye, everybody.
Happy spring.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Rochelle?
Thank you.